Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Marco, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, David.
Appreciate having you here. What I like to do, I want to try to do is come full circle, right? So I want to start by asking you, what is a day in the life of Marco today? What do you do today?
Well, today I get up and I hit my knees immediately. Uh-huh. And I literally thank God I'm alive and pray and meditate for 10, 15 minutes. And, you know, I look at some of my my program work. And
program work, so you are?
I'm in a program of recovery.
Okay.
Which is, you know, it's a 12-step
sure.
anonymous program. and been in that program for about 3.5 years. So
Great. That's
how I start my day. And if the kids are with me, I'll make them breakfast. If they're with their mom, I mm-hmm. work out after that and,
right.
you know, hit the gym, run. Running is a big part of it, physical activity. And then I work from now, currently at the moment, I'm working kind of either from my home studio or from a location in New Jersey called Bell Works.
Okay. So that's where you reside in Jersey.
I live in New Jersey,
right?
Yeah. So I wake up in the state of New Jersey most of the time, unless I'm on a traveling road show.
No doubt.
Like
no
the
doubt.
Last couple of weeks, I've been, as my buddy said, he said I was a traveling podcaster. I'm like, I'm not a traveling podcaster, dude. I'm just out.
Yeah.
Traveling around, working on the road. I was, but yeah, I mean, I help a lot of guys.
Mm-hmm.
I talk to a lot of people on the phone.
Great.
Who are in our program.
All about recovery. And
not always, but you know, I think that's taken the biggest piece of my life, and I'm happy to do it now.
It's service.
Service, 100%. Yeah. Service is something that, you know, it helps remove me from myself,
mm-hmm.
which is very important because I can get in my own way very easily.
You're not the only one, brother. I know exactly how you feel about that. So service work has taken up a lot of your time besides, I guess, your family life, your professional life. You try to fill it up. You try to fill the gaps with service.
Yeah, service. And, you know, I'm active in our program, active
mm-hmm.
in, you know, home groups and all the things that we do as suggested
awesome,
when you come in. And,
no doubt.
You know, with helping other men in our program. Best I can,
right?
And then just trying to stay in contact with people. You know, I mean, if I'm going through a day-to-day basis, I think it sometimes varies. But
sure.
I'm a video producer and a marketing consultant, and so some of that, you know, professional life intertwines
mm-hmm.
with obviously every day it changes a little bit, but that's
right.
what I do on a day-to-day basis. And meetings,
yeah,
are part of my day.
Big time.
Nowadays it's Zoom or in person, but.
Right.
Yeah, that's I'm grateful. I wake up every day, I'm grateful. I go to bed and I'm grateful. If I can get in that state, I'll have a good day. And again, throughout the day, right? Like it's our, we have a step on that, which is, you know, exactly where I try to be in that moment of present, try to be present every day.
That's a big thing, right?
It's hard.
It's hard for me. It's very difficult. It's something that I just recently, like my focus is all about being in the moment, being a part of the moment, you know, not having my head somewhere totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times I could be in a room, but I'm not even here. And that's a big like character defect of mine
that I'm
working on.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm there. We were just actually at dinner with my good friend Jeremy and another guy who's just coming in to, you know, recovery.
Yeah, right.
And it's amazing at how much we are just consumed with self.
Mm-hmm.
And the thoughts that are running wild in our head.
What about you? What about me? Or, yeah.
Well,
and it's not even like for me, I don't think it's like purposely done. It's just a defect of mine that
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, I can easily make the whole thing about me.
Right.
I can reflect on the day, how did it affect me? And there's like, I'm surrounded by people and moments and, you know, things that are happening that, you know, I look back, I'm like, man, I wasn't even really a part of that because my head was way over here.
Right. Right.
Trying to make something happen instead of actually being in the moment that was
right.
happening.
Worrying about the future or
yeah.
regretting the past
right.
and ruining the moment.
Right. So I guess today for Marco sounds sounds really based in recovery, based in sobriety, based in service, you know, but I guess it wasn't always like that, right? There's a reason why your days are like this presently. You know, you take mm-hmm. focus in service and, you know, helping others and being present. So there's a process to becoming that guy, right?
Right.
So what we do here at the Most High Show is we share stories, mm-hmm. you know. We share stories of addiction, you know, the struggles of addiction, the struggles of sobriety. And, you know, so where do you think the best place to start your journey would be at?
Well, I guess for me, you know, I also spend a lot of my time in God, present of God, presence mm-hmm. of God. I mean, if Amen. I can't have God in my life, I can't have any of this. So, you know, for mm-hmm. me, that is where does it start with addiction?
Yeah.
You know, I'm not really, I can't answer that question. I don't know, but I know that it runs in my family. My mm-hmm. mother died from alcoholism when I was 16.
Wow.
So, you know, I believe that I do believe there's genetics involved mm-hmm. in certain aspects of it. You know, where did it start for me? I mean, I've always been anxious and high strung in a sense, right. kind of like driven. So even when I was a little kid, I would be kind of all over the place. And I mean, at a young age, I kind of started experimenting. Right? Mm-hmm. I grew up in Chicago. My brother, my dad, my mom, we had a good life. And looking back now, you can kind of see where the disease of yeah. alcoholism interfered with my mom's life.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I mean, you know, like, you know, I don't want to do too much comparing, but I, you know, my life coming up, you know, I feel like I had a lot of good things as, you know, when I think about me being a kid, but mm-hmm. when I look at it in, like, when I look at myself and like, why, you know, why did I do these things? You know, I think, it kind of paints the picture a little bit more clearer, you know, like I have family members that were, you know, alcoholics, addicts and all that. And that affected me, you know. So would you say you're sorry to hear about your mom, by the way, but she lost her life due to alcoholism. Is that what you said?
Well, yeah, she yeah. did. She died. Basically, you know, my brother found her. He was 13. My parents were mm-hmm. separated, and mm-hmm. he found her on the floor dying of an accidental painkiller and alcohol combination, okay. right? So she died when she was 49 years old.
So what was your daily life then, you know, having a being a child of somebody that's suffering an addiction? Do you think that shaped what was happening to you? Did you already have, like, an influence or a negative effect from somebody else's addiction, you know, now that you look back on it?
Well, yeah, if you come into our program and it talks about it being a family disease,
yeah.
right? And you start to see and understand where, you know, maybe it affected me negatively or I had some trauma at the right. same time, but.
Definitely an influence. Right. Like, I mean, you yeah. know, it's like a part of your life. It's forever a part of your life. You know what
well,
I mean?
I agree. And I mean, I remember her progressing. Like, they talk about the progression of this and it gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, she was.
Yeah.
Beautiful, artistic, you know, kind, loving person from Finland. You know, she loved Finland. Oh, wow. She loved her family there.
And yeah.
Her name's Päivi. It's actually tattooed on my chest.
Wow.
Beautiful woman, kind, caring. And then it's just kind of slowly, like now I see it. You
yeah.
know, maybe at the moment I'm just like,
yeah,
you know,
you're young.
It's 15, 14,
sure.
12, and you're in the middle of chaos and family and my dad and her, you know, broke up. But how did it affect me? To this moment, I'm not 100% sure. You know, mm-hmm. I guess I'm doing my work. You can kind of see,
right?
But in our program, we remove the victim mentality,
right?
And so I'm not playing a victim
you're
role anymore. And
you're focus on you.
But I know she had a disease, and
yeah.
that's all that. And I pray for her now because I knew she was sick and suffering. I know she's always with me in a spiritual way, yeah. but I know that, you know, it wasn't her fault as well. She didn't choose to do that,
right.
you know, and. Unfortunately and tragically it happened, but I have to live in the yeah. present now and not dwell in a state of, but unfortunately
sure.
that sort of same cycle
yeah.
kind of came full circle for me, right? Like
so now you're anxious, you're growing up a little anxious,
yeah.
kind of getting into stuff. So what's early,
yeah, I mean,
what's early teenage life looking
like? Oh, it's probably like every other young kid in 12, you know, 13, the
yeah.
90s and grew up in Chicago, so a lot of sports, played soccer and hockey and, you know, high levels. And, but then, you know, the weekends, started playing you know, the tough guy role with all my buddies and yeah. running around the neighborhood and getting, I mean, I remember starting to drink pretty young. Mm-hmm. I would say, like 14, I remember going to Finland, maybe 13 even, like trying the first year. But I remember the first time I really, you know, felt the feeling of release from alcohol and beer was being in Finland. And, you know, I'm not blaming Finnish culture, but they drink a lot.
Yeah.
And everybody was, I was 14.
What a time that must have been.
On a cruise ship. I mean, on a cruise ship. And in the moment, you're like, this is life, right? But I remember, this would be actually before my mom died, but we each got a 24-pack. Mm. And two of them, actually. It's 14. And you go down on the cruise ship, and it was like living the dream. But, it, you know, looking back now, you're like, man, that's the signs of what's going to come. It's not going to be fun.
It's and that just can, that continued. Actually being intoxicated.
Right? Oh yeah, exactly. Feeling, like literally like, you know, what's his name? Leo on the boat. You know? That's kind of what it felt like. But it didn't last, you know, and then you try to search for that. I think I was searching for that feeling forever.
From that moment, you think from that moment, really?
I mean, maybe not the exact moment, but there was moments like that where you feel that freedom. And I remember the first time, you know, I smoked weed, and now weed's legal everywhere, but I remember the first time I smoked it, I literally thought I could fly. And I was like, I'm flying. And I wanted that. That's that feeling of freedom that now I have from a spiritual connection to, you know, a higher power. And that's what has helped me the most. But yeah, I mean, without talking too much, I just caused a lot of problems. You know, gave my dad, I'm surprised my dad, you know, didn't have a heart attack. Honestly, we caused a lot of problems. My brother was young. I should have been a better brother. Should have been a better son. Went back and made amends for all that later. Mm-hmm. But, you know, growing up in Chicago, a lot of fights, just a lot of chaos, a lot of, but there's also good moments mixed in with that too. You know, you have,
that's the one thing, you know, I always, you know, if anybody ever asks me, like, you know, the it's not all doom and gloom. I mean, there's like precious moments in being an athlete, right? At a good level, that lifestyle, you know, it's a very accepted, even as a teenager. You know, you party on the weekends, you know, you're a jock, you know, you're popular, you know, you're living that social life, that social high school, teenage life. I mean, that's a full of fun for a while.
And it's accepted, right? It's accepted to be, and that's kind of, I have 9-year-old twins and they're, you know, Axel and Ariella, the love of my life, right? And you know, you think in a couple of years, they're going to be getting into this. And it's, you know, you try not to live with fear of like, oh man, what's going to happen?
But the anxiety.
Yeah. But they're 9 and we have a great relationship.
Yeah.
But you know, at the same time, like society accepts the parties at the houses and the parents, well, I don't want my kid to drink somewhere else, so drink here. And it's a complete cultural shift that somehow, I mean, for our kids to thrive and be the best they can be, it's somehow you have to shift that. And that's, it's not okay, I don't think, to drink at 13 and 12 and take pills and whatever, you know, nowadays, like vaping, CBD and THC. It's a slippery slope. And not everybody has the allergy, right?
Some people get along in their life and they go through that, you know, they go through their high school to college experience or whatever. And then, you know, it's they don't come to podcasts like this and talk about
their journey. It might not end up in disaster. They're just normal.
Yeah.
They'll have a couple sips of wine at dinner and not end up in Las Vegas 3 days later. I mean, it just went on and on. I'm back of like the full circle and caused a lot of damage. And you know, but like you said, there was moments of greatness. I fell in love with a beautiful woman named Danielle. I met her in Florida. Went to New Jersey, followed her around, went to South.
Now, how old are you?
I was like 19, met her, and you know, I mean, I could tell I was already a little crazy. The second day I met her, I'm like, I think I'm in love with you, and I'm going to marry you. And she's just like, what is wrong with this guy? But it happened, and you know, unfortunately, you know, I didn't even see it. You don't see it when you're in the state of, you know, whatever.
Now, by 19, is it a daily thing? Is it
by
a weekend
19,
thing?
Yeah. I would say it's like weekends, but you know,
spring break type of deal.
No, it was every weekend. Every weekend. And you know, over time, I remember you know, senior year of high school, I could tell there was something. I could tell back then even there was something wrong.
Something was happening.
So I quit smoking weed, shaved my head, and I'm like, all right, I'm gonna be fully committed to soccer and hockey. I played college soccer and hockey, and I'm like, that's all I'm gonna do. And it lasted for a little bit. mm-hmm. right? Until you get the taste again, and you're like, all right,
yeah,
it's back on.
Yeah, it's almost like you're transitioning to, I guess you're going to college. That's a whole different lifestyle yeah. too, right?
Well, it was interesting because I went to college and I was like, for a couple of years, I was the, you know, don't party, don't do this, only sports. I was straight up just straight edge athlete.
Oh, okay, cool.
And then I came out to New York when I got a scholarship to go to New York and for the college called Long Island University. And it was just, you know, I got a job as a club promoter. So,
okay, so you're in school,
yeah,
playing soccer. Your job while you're in college is you're a party promoter.
Party promoter. That worked out well for my, you know, what
now,
I mean.
Now, what was your, so you already saw, you already knew that there might have been an issue that you had.
Well, I knew it because of my mom, and I knew it was in my family. They had talked about it.
Yeah,
you know, they had talked about alcoholism
in
the genetic bloodline. And I remember her even talking about it, and my dad even talking about it. Like, yeah, there's an alcoholic. Mm. I think one of her uncles or grandpas was an alcoholic in Finland.
Right.
And like full blown, you know, like fell into a lake, frozen lake, and went blind. Like crazy stuff, you know, in the old days. And
wow.
You could tell there was like normal people when you're probably not going to fall into a lake and go blind. So
right. So when you saw,
I don't
this...
know if that might have been during World War II. I might be confusing stories a little bit, but there was definitely. Proof, right?
It wasn't like something coming out of left field to you. You weren't ignorant to what was going on.
But I was in denial.
Yeah,
I'm sure you
not to
there.
Me.
This won't happen to me.
Right,
not
yeah.
me. You know,
gotcha.
them maybe, but no way. I'm not. That's not me.
So when you take this job as a party promoter, are you feeling like, oh, I won't be affected by this because I'm living a different lifestyle?
Yeah.
You know, I can excel here instead of being left at the party making parties. You know, you can keep a clear head, you can be focused, you know, you won't let that stuff affect you.
I think at that point, when you look back now, in the mm-hmm. moment, I had no clue.
Oh, okay.
Right, but looking back now, I took that career, or whatever, like the part-time job. I was working at a clothing store, I remember I got to New York, and I was ambitious, right? I got off the train, and I went down, like, from 34th Street, back and forth, restaurants and shops, like, just sure. asking if they needed someone to do anything.
Oh, okay.
I got three jobs in a weekend.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, it's like I walk into a bar and you're like, I'm like, I bartend. You're like, and then for the first time working, you're like, I forgot what it was, like a sexy, well, I don't even know what the drinks are even called. Cosmopolitan. And I was like, I just stood there. You completely didn't even know how to make it. But
yeah
I mean, I think for me, it was a way to be around it more and accept it, just make it acceptable part mm-hmm. of my life subconsciously.
Yeah.
But that continued for a while, you know, just partying and gotten.
Oh, so when you become a party promoter, you start.
Yeah, about New York parties. I mean, you don't need a big imagination to figure out what happens in New York.
If there's a place to do it, if there's a place to do it, that's the spot. So you're in school, you're a party promoter. What is life like then? I mean,
I thought it was good, right?
Yeah.
You think it's good, and you wake up. I don't know. It felt like it's
did
good in the moment.
Did stuff start passing you by?
I mean, I had a lot of signs. I would get into, you know, I don't want to get too much detail, but there was fights, right? There was violence. There was arrests. There was things like that happened. And, I was just a little drunk that night. And
right.
It really wasn't an everyday thing. But it started getting a little more frequent. And maybe it was like once a year from the time I was 17 to 21. And then it was like 3-4 times a year from 22 to... I don't know, 25.
And you're maintaining a relationship too?
Yeah, I was dating my now ex-wife,
right.
Danielle. You know, and this is like, I don't know, I feel bad because I do feel bad. I made amends to her the best I can. And she just was living with someone who, I mean, would show up to her conferences with like, just stupid, like a black eye, like, hello, who is this guy? Oh, this is just embarrassing for her, you know?
Yeah.
Just stupid. But that's what it did, and we got married, and I had good jobs. I was, like, working at NBC and working at I was a video producer and a writer. And
So you gained a great trade during this whole experience.
Yeah, I met some, you know, coincidentally, I met this guy, Patrick, who gave me an opportunity, and I was working at NBC, and, you know, my lack of honesty cost me a job. I lost that job. I lost that. Like, I would have these opportunities, and then I would lose them. Meanwhile, blaming everybody else for my problems.
Right. So when you say lack of honesty, are you trying to like manipulate situations to work for you?
Yeah, just like showing up to work late.
Oh,
and,
okay.
You know, not like going in. I mean, just doing stupid things, right? Like dumb things where you're coming to the studio and even out all night before, so you take a nap in the sound booth.
Right. I mean, the the cause of it is your lifestyle at the time.
And even though it was like my dream career, honestly. I mean, I was making videos at 14. That's all I ever wanted to do, but I couldn't even show up correctly. I couldn't show up in a respectful manner. I would show up so selfish. And those are the kind of things that still now, it's like, man, it's just dumb, but I did it.
So I guess this this goes on for a while then, because you're getting this opportunity young in life at NBC, right? You're in the field that you're currently in right now, right?
Well, it was called Trio. It was an old TV station that they had.
And, oh, okay.
It was like a subcategory of NBC. But yeah, I was an associate producer working in studios, and I was like 25 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And got married, moved to Jersey.
Yeah,
and you know, I was like, I'm not commuting. I'm just gonna start my own company. And
oh wow, that's really ambitious. Yeah.
So. Well, it's all—is it ambition or is it just delusion, right? You know, is it delusion? And so that's what I was delusionally thinking, but it actually kind of, you know, Danielle, my ex-wife now, she was working, I had an opportunity to get into commercial real estate with her company, her father's company. Like, I mean, all these things.
Oh, yeah, a lot of stuff.
Just blowing it all off to do what I want to do. Meanwhile, you know, I'm taking advantage of being alone.
Right.
Like, isolation was kind of what I was seeking. Seeking isolation.
Isolation.
And what could I do? And making excuses like, oh, I need to do this because it makes me a better editor. Mm-hmm. Or it makes me a better shooter. I can direct better. I
do this way better after a couple of drinks.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to loosen up.
Right, 100%. So that's where that took, and that was the path that just kept going, you know, getting into nightlife. I had a nightlife web show. Like, I mean, the way I manipulated my own self into these situations, I started a nightlife TV web series, shooting in nightclubs all across the world at 27.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, well, not for
if you're not
if you're not one of us. So that was you know, it just kept getting like, it's like the situations kept getting more progressively worse.
Yeah.
And
so I guess this goes on for a while. Your lifestyle, you see it in getting, I guess, increasingly unmanageable, right? But when do you say, what happens?
Oh man, when was
to
the,
where you're like, dude.
Well, I guess the rock bottom. Get to rock bottom quicker than slower.
Right.
Well, we had kids. Mm-hmm. She put up with a lot. She was very kind and loving, and I was selfish and self-centered and an a-hole, right? Mm-hmm. To say it slow. I mean, I'll be honest about it. I mean, just wasn't the best person. But it was like in our, you know, literature talks about the Jekyll and Hyde, you know, and it's a crazy thing. When I remember seeing that for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh. She called me Jekyll and Hyde because I'll be kind and loving and charismatic and show up and be responsible, and then I'd just be a egomaniac with an inferiority complex.
Yeah.
but that, you know, the rock bottom was when we got into an argument later. Our kids are 9 now, they're about 5. Mm-hmm. We got into an argument and she had enough, kicked me out. And I mean, every right to, honestly.
Right.
Looking back now, I see why she did. And I woke up and I was like in this Holiday Inn, and I'm just like, what the heck happened to my life? How did I end up here? Living, you know, had everything I ever wanted, and here I am. And it was like a God shot right there. I was literally sitting there, and after seeing it all happen, you know, my mom died. I've had uncles who had. I've had all these situations that, you know, I've had moments where God was in my life, like opening these doors. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I'm not going to go just yet. You know, like a good friend of mine, Jim. I went to this thing called Emmaus. It's a spiritual walk. And this was when I was still active.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this spiritual weekend. You know, I had this moment where I was close to Jesus, right? And I never understood it. And I was, that weekend, I felt open. I felt connected to God. And as soon as I left, I remember just like, I'll take a glass of Chardonnay. And it was like, and everybody at the table, though, was like,
because
I didn't understand. It was all guys in recovery. And I remember saying, can I have this glass of Chardonnay? And everybody looked at me. And I didn't get it. I just didn't comprehend. So, you know, there was moments throughout my life where there was a higher power.
Right.
And I didn't listen. you know, and you, or there was,
you just kind of like turn your back on it.
Yeah, I mean, didn't accept.
There's the impact of that moment, that spiritual moment, had to impact you deeply.
I mean,
we're talking about it now, but so quick, you know, you leave that setting and you just make a choice to do something else, man.
Never even understood it, you know. And actually, when my mother passed away, right before she passed away, we actually went to an Alateen thing, you know. Shouldn't even be, well, whatever, I mentioned it, but you know, for teenagers. Right. Mm-hmm. And I remember having, I had a prejudice against it forever because I thought it was, you know, I'd never wanted my mom to have that connotation,
that
of
stigma,
being that person, you know, being an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Like, how dare they call her that, you know? But in all honesty, it's a sickness that she couldn't heal on her own. She couldn't recover on her own, and she killed her. I mean, it's literally, it talks about jails, institutions, and death, and I believe that's true.
That's very true, man.
That's very true. And, you know, then basically I found a program.
So hold on. So
jumping back,
Yeah, let's take just a couple steps back. So you wake up at a Holiday Inn. Your wife says, that's it.
And it wasn't like hotel, motel, Holiday Inn. No, it's like, God, why am I here? You know? Yeah. But that's
so. But I guess you do. Did you? I guess you do have knowledge of a way. Have knowledge of a way to, like, the steps you take to try to change, right?
Well, I had been to a couple.
You've seen,
you know, meetings over the last couple of years from her uncle named Carl, who kind of planted the seeds.
Right.
And I was just too egotistical. I'm like, I'm just going to go to the gym and do this on my own. Right. You know,
work it out.
Yeah, work exactly. And that's also talked about that, right? Like, we try to find another way.
Different paths.
But unfortunately, I just wasn't there present for her and the kids at home as much as I thought I was. And I wasn't, like, you're talking about going back to being present. But yeah, waking up and, you know, just that feeling of despair and, like, pity and regret and shame and, you know, like, your insides are burning. It's horrible when you lose everything, in a sense, right? Maybe because you don't really lose everything, but you feel like you do.
You lose very important things.
Right, you
that
lose.
Like, you know, give you, I mean, your identity. You know,
exactly.
I mean, like, I'm a husband, I'm a father.
Right.
Regardless of, you know, you're manipulating it with an addiction, but you're trying to make now a big change happens. A big negative turn takes place. At that time.
A shift in perception that shattered, you know, everything about my existence.
Right.
And finally, like, oh my gosh, this happened, you know, and the seed was planted. So I thought came to my head.
That's what you're going to say. So what does help look like at this?
Accepting.
Who are you calling? You wake up? I mean,
happened? I mean, it was, you know, the day I woke up, I've been at everything that year, right? I mean, I'd started to get to the point where I was just taking everything and anything. And it's crazy because from the outside, you wouldn't think it. And I didn't even think it was anything wrong with it.
Sure.
You know, like, you feel completely normal, but people looking at it sees, probably would see nothing. But for me, trying to calm the noises, the fear, the anxiety, doing whatever I can, wake up that morning, going back to that morning, and her uncle planted a seed, my uncle Carl. And I just went to a meeting, literally, and I raised my hand for the first time. It was a huge meeting, 100 people in a Sunday morning, Edison, New Jersey, and I'm just like, my name is Marco, and I'm an alcoholic, you know, and like bawling. 35-year-old man sitting there, you know, crying my eyes out. But it was one of the most freeing moments of my life, just weights
just let it
off my
let
shoulders.
It go.
Yeah. And from that point on, you know, I just stayed really active. Very active in the middle, you know, unfortunately, through that time too, there was a divorce and, you know, things
you're going through all those struggles. You're staying sober.
Right.
Staying
sober with the help of the program, guys in the program, guys like my friend Jeremy, who was here, you know.
There's a gentleman, Jeremy, right over here. He came in as Marco's support. you know, I know you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, basically, I had a home group in the city. They could find it on the app. It's called Sober Dads. I don't know if we're doing on time, but I came active in my home group, you know, working through the steps of our program, and coincidences started happening. You know, like, all throughout that, there was things happening that
is
were
that
way
what you call that?
God
that,
incidences.
Yeah.
All right, let's call him God MC. Yeah. There's no, is it odd or is it God?
Yeah,
that's my sponsor. God, that's what my sponsor Ron says, you know. And I started being a better brother to my my brother Miko, better dad to my better dad to my kids. Mm-hmm. The first couple of months, my son and daughter, like, even though I wasn't at home, I was like, nothing was working out the way I thought I wanted it to work out. They came to me one day and said, "Oh my God, Daddy, your face has changed."
Wow.
And I remember that moment, and I just started
to break
crying.
It down.
Yeah,
man. I will break you down.
And I started, you know, opening up my heart, right? Opening up, being willing to listen. And these incidences, like I was saying with my buddy Jeremy, I'm getting on a train coming from New York one day. I think I was after a meeting. Mm-hmm. And I just spent a lot of time in meetings working. I was working for a great hospitality group. They like saved my life. Honestly, okay. I was working in good company on hospitality. Yeah. I'm plugging them. Because they're awesome.
Yeah, give them a shout out.
Yeah, they have tons of restaurants in New York. But I was working a lot, going to meetings, very spiritual, like praying all day long. Mm-hmm. And I got on the train one day and I hear a future friend, I hear a guy just talking. And I hear the language and I'm like, I literally peek my head around the thing, you know, in the train, in Jersey Transit. I'm like, hey, are you friends with Bill? This guy's just like, what the? And here he is here. And it was amazing because he got off at the same stop as me.
Yeah,
and he was active in his home group and his program, and we just clicked, you know, and we've been like really good friends ever since. And,
great,
been an inspiration for me in my recovery, and you know, started helping guys on a daily basis, sponsoring guys. But you know, my life didn't go the way I wanted it to go. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't stop a divorce from happening. It didn't stop.
Sure.
You know, my cousin actually passed away when I was 6 months into recovery in Florida, and I don't know if I can't say if he was an alcoholic, but he died young, 49 years old. From he had hepatitis C, but so you know, this life didn't go exactly as I wanted it to go.
Sure.
Still, you know, but that's another thing is what I've learned, unfortunately, the hard way. I think that's the only way guys like us learn is like, it's not always going to go the way I want.
Right.
And
but what a blessing, right? Even though these, you know, when you face these times that you know when things aren't going as you like maybe foresee it or maybe you want it to go. But where you're at now, whatever comes your way, you're in such a better position than you were when you weren't sober, you know.
Oh, 100%.
You know, there's a way to, you know, you have a support group.
Mm-hmm.
You have a structure, you know, you have a higher power. You have all these things that, you know, help you. You have all these tools that help you deal with life on life stuff, man.
Right. 100%.
And you know, just like you, I've faced a ton of like tribulation in sobriety that I know that if, you know, if I just wasn't using or I just, you know, wasn't drinking anymore, if those things would come at me without me, you know, having this network of people, this network of support, this way of life, that it would destroy me in sobriety, you know, it would destroy me sober to deal with the loss and the difficulties that I've faced, you know, these last years. So, you know, it's a blessing to face these things in life, knowing that you have a homie like your man Jeremy over here, you know, to be with you during these times.
Well, I mean, my first sponsor, Max, like guys like that, who guys in the program who you reach out to. I remember, you know, this guy, Jeff, who he's like a life coach now. You know, it's amazing the transformations people go through when they're hitting like these, you're like just the worst person. I'm not saying he was, but I know I wasn't the worst person, but you go through these transformations, you're making valuable contributions to the world. And I remember going to this guy, Jeff's office in Midtown. He would like sit there for an hour with me, just talking about, you know, what we do, or how to be humble, how to be kind, how to have, you know, positivity and energy and love and kindness and a higher power. And I'd get out one day, I call my brother. I'm like, man, this guy's like life coaching me. It's amazing. And my brother's like, well, how much are you paying him? Don't let him pay you too much. I'm like, no, it's free. You don't get it. Everything's free. He's like, what's the catch?
Yeah.
What's the catch?
Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like we do this for fun and for free. And it's amazing that we can help people and we get helped in return, you know, and attitudes and traits like humility and kindness and being loving, tolerant of everybody. And like talking about fatherhood, it's just like, you know, there's stuff as a dad I want them to do. I want them to be this. I want them to do that. And you start to, all right, well, maybe that's not who they are. I don't know. It's different when you have more patience. For me, I have a lot more patience and never had patience. And I'm not perfect at it.
Well, you know what, like, going through life in these groups that we're, you know, in this group that we're in, right? Living things like expectations. justifying,
you
know, looking at the mirror, looking at taking an inventory,
right?
You know, making amends like you talk about,
right?
Like, those, and I say this all the time, those aren't things that, like, you know, you share in, I guess, what you would call a normal person's life,
right?
You know, somebody that doesn't, you know, we're a bunch of guys sitting here and we're not familiar with, you know, the way we're living right now. We're not going to touch on those such, you know, these, you know, valuable topics, like these life changing, you know, character making topics that,
right,
that shape your life. You know, we talk about, you know, a show, we talk about the game, or, you know, as dudes, we don't, you know, you don't do that. Well, I mean, there's not that layer,
100%,
you know,
100% agree.
You know, but in here we can talk about, you know, the exact nature of all my wrongs.
Well, that's exactly, I mean, I remember seeing, somehow this came across, the way we fell into this, or I fell into this, was like, I remember seeing the Most High Media, and I'm like, that's an interesting name, like Most High, you know, you think as a, you know, former, you know, I'm recovered now, I feel like I'm recovered, and you have the Most High, but then when you think about it, right, it's a quote in the Bible about being in the Most High place, and being, and meditating in that state, and being, and praying, and connecting to that, and I appreciate that. But, you know, it's funny, like, I really related when my home group is called Sober Dads, and I mean, that's not, it's funny, because I walked into this room, and I didn't relate to anybody for any of these meetings I was going to, and I walk into this group, and I was just like, man, I relate to everybody in here, like, the stories, and the experiences, and being a father, and focusing on recovery and fatherhood at the same time was just, like, perfect for
priceless,
me. It's a godsend.
Man.
It was literally priceless. A godsend, yeah.
It's priceless, man, you know, and I really would suggest, you know, if people wouldn't say that they have addiction issues or things like that, like, just to work on life by that structure, work on yourself as a person using that structure.
I mean, oh, man, everybody could benefit. Yeah, I mean, every single person could benefit from what we do on a daily basis. And
definitely.
You know, I mean,
so now, I'm sorry not to interrupt you, but Sober Dad, so what does that consist of? What is that?
It's a group. I mean, it's a group like the rest of our program.
Right.
And
get together.
It's same thing we do at any other meeting. And
is it online? Is this something you share?
Yeah, if someone is a dad and they're in recovery, and they can find it pretty easily. You know, the first couple letters in the alphabet will lead you there.
Cool.
On the app. But yeah, it's a home group out of New York City, and it's been so many loving people in there. Guys who like love me unconditionally, and until. I remember seeing it in a meeting one time, like, we're going to love you until you can love yourself.
Mm.
And I was like, that's so cheesy, you know, but it's true.
It's really,
you know,
true.
But also what I've learned in recovery is something I never even understood. Is like, God loves me, you know, no matter all the things I've done. And I tell that to my kids every time I put them to bed at night. Like, God loves you. And it's just amazing because it's true. You know, like, I'm forgiven. I can't live my life in shame and regret. And I'm forgiven because I've changed. I've recovered, I'm repented, and I do my best not to go back to that. I'm sure that, you know, their mom would maybe disagree at times, and I'm not the most perfect person. I'm happy that she's happy in her own way.
Yeah.
And, you know, do I regret sometimes of the way my family life worked out? Yes, I do, but I can't, you know, I'm living proof that I'm alive, I'm here, you know, like, I'm here on a podcast talking about recovery, and 5 years ago, I never would have done that. Like, are you kidding me? I'm like, blah, blah, blah.
Well, just like, I guess, you know, we can try to bring it full circle as, you know, we begin this talking about, almost immediately talking about service.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're living a lifestyle now that rotates, you know, a lot of it rotates around helping, just being helpful, helping people.
Right.
Like, live better, like, learn about themselves. I mean, that shows, you know, who you are. I mean, that's a big proof of the difference of who you were then, who you are now. You know, you make service a priority. Helping people is a priority in your life now. Mm. That's a huge thing to say, man. Like, not everybody's saying that either, you know?
I don't know if I could say it. It's the biggest thing in my life, but I try to make it that. I really do. And I mean, there's like one principle that if you want to break down my faith into one thing, I could say, like, if I want to treat others how I want to be treated, and my kids understand the golden rule. Because that's the simplest concept. If I can treat others and then how I want to be treated, and if I can leave them with one thing that they can remember and practice for forever, that would be it, and that that they're loved no matter what. And that's one I'd like to remember too. I could easily get caught up in like, oh, you were so bad, blah 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 blah. You did this, you did that. My head just gets caught on a hamster's wheel sometimes. But then I pray and I meditate and I either go for a run and exercise and call somebody. You know, and if anybody is struggling, like I don't, you know, there's tons of guys in this room and tons of people everywhere that will help them. And that's the beauty of what we have, is that people will help you if you ask.
Right. So one thing I do want to say before we get off here is, so Marco's daily life now, in sobriety, the structure, what gets you going, what keeps you being you today, praying, meditation, exercising, meetings.
And eating. No, I love to eat. I eat a lot.
And eating. Yeah. That's a good schedule.
Yeah, I eat a lot of food. I work out. I mean, I try to laugh with the kids. We go skiing and, you know, play sports and just have fun with the kids, watch comedies. And they're into Harry Potter.
They're all in Jersey, too?
The kids are in Jersey with their mom right now. And I'm down here with you guys. And I just try to travel if I can. It's been a little weird the last year.
Yeah.
You know, there was something happening in the world.
Right.
It kind of altered that. But, you know, I think we're going to go to Finland this summer to see my mom's family, my family there.
Sweet.
And, I have a tattoo on my arm. It's called, it says Sisu. It's a Finnish word for like perseverance and never giving up no matter what. Mm. But there's also, you know, for me, I found out that there is a bad side to that too. Like I continued to try to do something over and over again. And it wasn't, at some point, like you have to, they surrender is still something for me that I take on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And if I can surrender and get out of my own way, my higher power has way better plans than I have.
You are preaching to the choir, brother. I'm telling you, that's something that I deal with too, man. You know, getting out of my own way, you know, letting your higher power drive. You know, man, Marco, thank you for being here, man. We appreciate your story. You know, it's a lot to chew on in an hour.
Yeah, I feel like I rambled there, but hopefully somebody can get help from nonsense. You know.
Is there any place you want to plug? Any place you want people to see you or follow you at? Or
I mean, if
like
somebody
that?
Needs help, they can reach out to me anywhere. They can just, you know, my social media. But I mean, I have a marketing company, and I consult with small companies to Fortune 500 companies who are trying to expand their social media and video and. You know, I'm just grateful to be here, so I'm not really here to plug anything. But
No doubt. Well, thank you very much again, man. And thank you guys for showing up here and tuning in today to the Most High Show. We want to thank Marco, thank Christian, and thank you all for, man, making this happen.
Thank you.
See you.